You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider. Pete Sampson, Tim O'Malley, previewing Stanford a day early with Thanksgiving week coming up. And it was a short week at Notre Dame. They head out, I believe, on Friday morning after doing like a kind of a Thursday Thanksgiving at the Morrison on campus. But they'll be out there a little bit early. Tim and I will be out there Friday, game Saturday night, ABC, 8 p.m. Eastern. It's a fascinating game if you really like Notre Dame football or just college football in general. But in terms of like,
and if you're listening to this podcast,
it just doesn't have like the national cachet as maybe it did when they went out there 2 years ago. Certainly not what the Iron Bowl has this weekend. But I think just in terms of style of play, this will be a repeat of Brian Kelly's post Navy comment. It's not going to be a Big 12 game where both teams are moving up down the field, which they did 2 years ago.
Yeah, and actually, a month and a half ago, I would have said, bet the over. Healthy Bryce Love, healthy Josh Adams, up and down, Notre Dame 42, Stanford 35. But I think that has changed since then. A lot has changed in the last month. This is, if removed Notre Dame fan, if you're a college football fan, this would be a fun one to line up and watch, because there is star power, but it's going to be in that two teams just going at it that aren't, because they don't have great passing games, it doesn't matter how good the running games are, you think it could be a little bit of the old school head knocking game all the way through.
If you really like interior line play,
the best matchup you could find. Yeah, if you want potentially
Quentin Nelson and Harrison Phillips go at it, great. I do. I think that'll be a really fun thing to watch. But for the casual fan, does not have the DeShone Kizer, healthy Josh Adams, healthy Christian McCaffrey type of star power happening. But with Notre Dame this week, we didn't get a chance to talk to Josh Adams because he was at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles on Tuesday. Couldn't make it in for interviews. True story. So we don't really know how healthy he is. Although with the running back injury situation, I'm not sure that we would know how healthy he was even if he did show up. Because there's no question that Josh Adams is much more banged up than anyone around Notre Dame is willing to let on. And when you compound that with the mysterious health status of Dexter Williams, it creates a bit of a conundrum for Notre Dame going. I don't really know how confident I should feel about Notre Dame's running game, because their running backs are literally limping into the finale.
I don't know how Dexter Williams can't be healthy right now, but I guess if you keep getting hit where you have a deep thigh bruise and maybe keep turning that ankle, you're not. But he has had enough time to rest, that's for sure. But you know what? The last time we saw him try and extend on a long run, but he had a 77-yard touchdown and turned into a 31-yard run where he was caught from behind by everybody. So clearly, he wasn't healthy. He hasn't really done anything since then, though, right?
He played quite a bit at Miami and was moderately effective in a blowout game. He got one snap total last weekend. I mean,
he tweaked it at Miami again. He could have had, you're playing the game and it's not something you're going to notice because we're not watching closely when they're getting killed to the one running back. But
it's just like, I mean, if you said before the season, Dexter Williams is going to average 6 carries a game, you'd have been like, that's pretty disappointing. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, did I say carries? I meant snaps. He's averaging 6 snaps a game. It's been very frustrating to sort of see the flashes of what he can do, and then you don't get the sense that the coaches want to go to it at 75% or 80%. Because it's like, if he played one snap against Navy, doesn't that mean you're healthy to play 12 snaps? That I have a hard time getting around.
I would think so, and I have a hard time getting around if, look, maybe he just can't run through injuries, but show him Josh Adams and show him Bryce Love running through these injuries. He has to respond as a competitor and play in this game. You cannot be 100% as a running back this late in the year. You are not going to be 100% as a running back. You're going to be getting hit. If he's a lead back next year, you think he's going to be 100% in late October and November? He won't be. You've got to learn to run through it. If they don't trust it, I don't know what to tell you, because Josh Adams is nowhere near as explosive as he was. Josh Adams is going to look so much better in the bowl game than he does right now. But you need Dexter Williams to help out in this game.
I mean, Josh Adams looks old.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like an eighth-year senior now, the way he's running and moving around and having to peel himself off the turf carry after carry. On top of that, Equanimee St. Brown, I would be completely floored if he played this weekend. Brian Kelly said that he had been cleared for non-contact practice on Tuesday. I can't think of an example, and we've brought up Greer Martini a couple times, who got the concussion against Miami, played a week later, but there was no midweek questioning about whether he was going to be available or not. He was just available from the get-go. Anytime there's cleared for contact, maybe on Wednesday, ran around on Thursday, that's an out. So what does Notre Dame do there? I asked Brian Kelly about that, said, you know, go to Miles Boykin. That is sort of a downgrade in speed and athleticism for sure. I would be surprised if the solution for no St. Brown is not Alize Mack and target Kevin Stepherson even more than you already are.
I think he had 9 targets last week. I think Stepherson's double digits plus a couple runs. Stepherson is the go-to guy in this game. Durham Smythe, or a tight end, will be more involved. You know, you can game plan for one of them, but it's hard to game plan for 2 tight end sets. Will we see more of the pro set, the 2 running back set that you've charted that's right. successful?
Barely at all last week. I think just 2 carries, and they were on the final drive, 2 plays before that back incompletion.
So it's, we all like Stepherson. I didn't go through the post. The subject on the board, Stepherson's our best receiver. I'm not against that.
I think Stepherson is the best receiver, and I said, you can take out the question mark.
Yeah, I now, St. Brown has had, remember, he's had his moments. There's just been few and far between this year. It's just remember back to the Equanimee of St. Brown last year, how much better he looked as a player. But he doesn't seem fully engaged. Pete, you've pulled out some clips of him not blocking. That's a big deal on this team, because you have to... That's one of your major goals here. Is this why these running backs get long runs? Is you got to keep blocking.
And Miles Boykin does a good job of that. I mean, I think in St. Brown's semi defense, I think he's sort of been waiting for what happened to him last week to happen to him all season.
Oh yeah, it's not totally his fault. He has no confidence where that ball's coming.
Nor should he.
No.
That's been a bit of an issue for him. And Stepherson, Claypool, Boykin—they've all sort of felt like what it is to go up and try to snare something high and away, but St. Brown, I feel like there have been a lot of instances with St. Brown. This almost happened at Miami. The ball got batted down before it even got to him, where he's trying to catch a high ball over the middle. You know, it's one thing if it's deep or it's, you know, fading out of bounds. There's been a bunch of those too. Like Durham Smythe got almost, he would have been killed 15 years ago at Miami on that pass that Wimbush threw down the middle. The receivers, I think, are a little bit gun-shy. Now, if Brandon Wimbush comes out on Saturday night at Stanford in his second half Brandon Wimbush, then I think that the passing game really can be productive. But Navy's defense last weekend was bail out of the way. We'll give you a bunch of short stuff. If you take it, great. If you don't, that's fine too. Stanford's probably not going to play that way.
And we didn't mention Claypool. We talked about it Monday, just a little banged up. My theory is that it's hard for a guy that's not used to playing banged up to play banged up, but he could give him something. We shouldn't remove Chase Claypool from him because he wasn't included in Kelly's answer because he's not stepping into the new role like Boykin is. I think Kelly was doing this is the next man in. Miles Boykin's up. But Chase Claypool, I mean, he's had some moments this year. I think they're going to need something from him.
Yeah, I mean, Claypool, he still played 38 snaps last week, which is a fine number. It's his low mark since the Georgia game, but it's not an alarmingly low number where you're like, oh, something's really wrong.
We just looked like he got really hurt.
Yeah.
I guess wasn't really hurt, but he acted like he was really hurt, and that he's got to be able to play through that too.
Yeah, there's no question. They need him to go with Stepherson and Boykin just to give him some personnel flexibility, but I think they may just have to get creative and what they run out there, whether that be the 2 running back set. They've I really like that look. They've only rushed 33 times all year out of it. You know, the two tight end set was a lot more pronounced last week. They rushed 24 times out of that compared to just two carries out of regular personnel, the three wide, one back, one tight end. So it's, I think they have a lot more personnel flexibility that they could throw out there on Saturday than they have earlier in the year. You know, some of that, but some of that would be forced because if you had a healthy St. Brown, I think that your best personnel is Claypool, St. Brown, Stepherson, sure. Smythe, and okay. Josh Adams.
Yes.
Make that your base thing, but they're just not going to have that luxury, I don't think.
When Stanford struggles, it is because they struggle against the pass. They're, I think of the three losses they have, quarterbacks are completing almost 74% of their passes. Now, Wimbush isn't going to have that type of game, obviously, against them. But if Wimbush can have a decent game throwing and a decent game running in terms of escape, mm-hmm. you know, on passing plays, we've talked about that. Stanford's run D is vulnerable. They make plays in the backfield, but other than that, it's 4.7 yards a game, 170 yards a game, and it's in the Pac-12 too. So they're definitely vulnerable to the run. It's just if Josh Adams is healthy enough to do it, or if Dexter Williams is. But we talk about Dexter Williams all year long. He has never been a bell cow of a running attack, so he almost has to be a ten carry guy. You can't go
I'd
the game.
I'd be thrilled. I'd be thrilled with Dexter Williams.
10 would be great, but we can't go in thinking, well, it's Williams' turn to get 17 carries if Josh Adams is hurt. We've never seen him handle that volume. I really do think you just need a second half Brandon Wimbush would obviously do it for Navy. You just need a quality Brandon Wimbush start, and then the running game can work. But if he struggles, Stanford has picked off 14 passes. They forced 12 fumbles. I think they've only recovered 7, but that's Notre Dame-level turnovers when Notre Dame was kind of on the rise. They haven't had one since the Wake Forest game, which this would be a great time for their next turnover against Stanford. Clearly they need it. They're vulnerable on D, but sometimes they have played better recently. It's 17 points per game in the last 5 games, down to like 335 yards allowed in those games. There's some, Pete, you pointed out, some bad teams in there. There's Arizona State, there's Oregon State, Oregon, but there's Washington. It's a quality team to be holding them down. And Cal's, it was a rivalry game. That was going to be another low-scoring game, but they are trending better defensively. If Notre Dame can just be somewhat healthy, and Wimbush can be, I think Notre Dame can get 30 points on them, but you can't do it without a healthy enough items.
Yeah, and a functional passing game from Wimbush, because yeah, right, the 4.69 yards per carry, I think that's 90th or 96th nationally. It's really poor. You know, with that in mind, these two stats go together. They're really low in tackles for loss, 96 nationally there. They're third, you know,
they're all from one guy, right? Yeah. But they're at the wrong spot for Notre Dame too, because that inside zone, or I'm sorry, that slow developing handoff that everybody loves. Harrison Phillips is their nose tackle, and he leads them in tackles and tackles for loss, but the tackles is amazing from nose tackle. Right. Tackles for loss is impressive at 13.5. You see that before. I went through it this week. Every snap, he has 46 stuffs for the nose tackle position. You can combine Notre Dame's inside linebackers, and that's what you're getting on stuffs. So that's two inside linebackers. That's the disruptive guy. I don't know how you scheme with Quentin Nelson. Do they scheme around that? Does he... He's the nose tackle.
Just block him.
Just block him, right? That's the way to go. Back to their still on their defense. Impossibly bad for a while on third down. Almost a 44% rate against for the season. That's worse than Nebraska. You guys know where Nebraska is right now defensively in the world of 2017. They are vulnerable enough. It's just they're very good at home. Is it five straight wins by David Shaw against top 10 teams at home? Consider that stat if you're a Notre Dame fan. Yeah. 5 straight against top 10. 6-0 regular season finales under David Shaw. Brian Kelly, if he loses this one, will be 2-6 at Notre Dame in a regular season finale. They're 22-6 under Shaw in his 6 years in November. Kelly in his 8 years is 18-14, including the two undefeated seasons there. Shaw has Kelly's number right now, and Brian Kelly has to beat him in this game.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame comes in having lost 8 straight games on the road to Power 5 ranked teams, which is ridiculous. I mean, and I know...
And Stanford's 3 of them.
Right. I know Brian Kelly was asked about this on Tuesday, and he correctly said, well, we're playing some... They're ranked teams. There's a reason they're ranked. That doesn't mean you can't get one of them or two of them.
Three of them. If you're in a program that can do that.
That's... Yeah, if they were 4-4, I would say, wow.
Nice job, yeah.
Incredible. You guys are really good. 0-8 is not. They're just the fact that they're good does not cut it. I do think if there was ever a team you were set up to beat, it would be this Stanford team this weekend. Because I just...
We haven't discussed Bryce Love's injury along with Josh Adams.
No, because I mean, we talk about Stanford's offense, because Bryce Love is very banged up, and I know the reaction to some of the, oh, he'll just tape it up, they'll play, like he'll play. Didn't everyone say the same thing about McCaffrey last year? And I know that didn't really make an impact in the game, but like, if you're hurt, you're hurt. It doesn't matter that you're playing Notre Dame. That's not a big deal. I mean, there's a discussion to be had at Stanford about whether this game means anything, because they're not going to the playoff. If Washington beats Washington State, which goes on at the same time as Stanford-Notre Dame, then Stanford's going to the Pac-12 title game. Would you rather have arrested Bryce Love for that against USC, or roll the dice against Notre Dame for really no particular reason other than like your non-conference home winning streak?
Right. I think the smart thing to do if you're Stanford is try to get to that major New Year's Six bowl by resting Bryce Love this week. If I'm not saying if he's 90%, you rest him. If he's, hey, can you get out there and give us five carries? Maybe that's not worth it, because Scarlett's a good running back. Nowhere near. Well, they're all good behind this line when they play against Notre Dame. That's the thing. Stanford finds a way to run the ball against Notre Dame.
They're functional.
They're not even close with Bryce Love. I understand that. But it's not like Stanford has nothing to offer in this game.
No.
They won't lay down and die just because Bryce Love doesn't play. But I do think there's something to be said about sitting him if he's not. If he's like Josh Adams was at his worst, maybe you don't play him.
I would think, look, if Notre Dame could somehow play in a meaningless game, which they
can't. No, you're right.
I think Josh Adams would have sat out at least once, maybe twice, but Notre Dame's not in that position right now. You know, I think with Stanford's offense, a couple stats that, one, personnel-wise, the switch to KJ Costello, a quarterback, who'll be making his fourth start, has been okay, does some good improvisational stuff. I think he's somebody, if you watched him, you would think he was better than his box score would indicate.
And I think he's better because his name's not Keller Crist, and I think Notre Dame would have hammered.
Yeah.
Keller Crist. So that's why I think it's a plus for Stanford. That, boy, watching Crist this year, I was just thinking, there's no way they're beating Notre Dame. But he's, I liked what Costello did against Cal, and you're right, that not that many points in the game, but he looks like a guy that's kind of coming along as a player.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a passing game that has a whole lot of speed behind it. In Costello's three starts, he's thrown one touchdown pass and two picks. He had a rushing touchdown, I believe, at Washington State. You know, not much of a running threat, but you'll probably see him have four or five carries in the game, mostly off scrambles. So you have to at least respect that. One thing that is unique about Stanford is how slow they play. They average 60 plays a game, which would rank 127th nationally. I mean, they do not move at all. They're just slow. And it's interesting because...
Which is ironic when they hand it to Bryce Love.
Because they rank 14th nationally in yards per play. So they have a very explosive offense that chooses not to explode. It's a strange dynamic there. You know, by contrast, Notre Dame has run 115 more plays. It's a game and a half worth of offensive stats that you could pile up. But
I think we both
that's just not what they like to do.
We both like Trent Irwin,
yes,
the receiver for Stanford. He's more of a possession guy, but he extends possessions because it's third down. He makes plays on third down. He has 23 first downs this year, I think 14 on third down, which is a lot for a team that doesn't throw much, if you think about that. It doesn't sound like a lot if it's a team that's throwing the ball 40 times a game, but 65 catches the last 2 years. He just knows how to get open. As you mentioned, he was a former five-star.
Yeah, he was a five-star in some places.
Yeah, it's not just knowing how to get open and being crafty. He's a talented wide receiver. But I do like it if Notre Dame, if Love can be matched up against him. I don't like it if he's not, because the best thing he does is get open and set you up with his routes. And that can be tough for Troy Pride in his third start. Although Pride, they've worked Pride out perfectly for this. He's a month in. Troy Pride, it's time to be, you know, an effective player in a big game like this. And of course they have Sean Crawford that they can play at the field side. Little banged up at left tackle. Walker Little may or may not play. Usually that means you don't play in college.
He has missed early time, so it's not a situation where like he's been nursing something around. He's actually missed time, so I feel like that will he may be out and that would obviously play well in Notre Dame's favor. I think with Stanford, in terms of them in their passing game, aside from Costello, obviously, J.J. Sarah-Whiteside, I think I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
You know, a big red zone jump fade ball type of player, not necessarily huge in terms of his height, but just a big athlete out there. That will be a very tough matchup for whoever draws him if Stanford gets inside the 10-yard line. And then on top of that, they've got a couple tight ends, you know, Caden Smith, Dalton Schultz.
Yeah, combined, they're like
even quality Parkinson's. I mean, they're getting close to where they were with tight ends 3-4 years ago, just in terms of the raw material that they have. So it's
if they had a better quarterback, it would be a very impressive offense as well.
Yeah,
that's probably the best way to look at Stanford. You need, and I don't mean Andrew Luck, but I mean you need, if you had a little bit better quarterback,
Kevin Hogan
would make this a difficult offense to stop with Bryce Love.
Yeah, so it's just not an offense that I look at, and I think what have we been saying all year, that Notre Dame's safeties were not that great, that they'd be susceptible to the deep ball, and that was where Notre Dame would sort of get found out. Well, I mean, Stanford is 93rd in 10-yard pass plays, and then I mean you bump it up
with a good safety and Justin Reed too. It's
just, no, I'm saying they've hit. And they're 113th in 40-yard pass plays. So if we're talking about true like big explosive field flipping pass plays, they're quite bad.
But when Love is healthy, they have plenty of big plays.
Right. It's just all in the run game. And I do think if I was Notre Dame defensively, I would roll up Nick Coleman or roll up Jalen Elliott, you know, just to have extra body there. I'm not saying he's going to make the play, but I would roll the dice on my corners against their receivers all game long in one-on-one situations, and maybe, you know, just leave one safety high and see if you can clean that up, because it's not, I don't think they have the quarterback to make Notre Dame pay for doing that, nor do I think they have the receivers to make Notre Dame pay for doing that.
With all that said, is it fair for me to say this comes down to Brandon Wimbush having, when the game's over, if you say he played pretty well, Notre Dame won the game?
Yeah, I would say,
obviously, if he plays great, they're going to win. Can you say
he played pretty well? I would go even a step lower than that. I would say if we don't talk about Brandon Wimbush after the game, Notre Dame won the game. If we mention, he just needs to clear, ugh, Brandon Wimbush. If you stay away from that, I think that they'll win.
But if you go to Brandon Wimbush, it's going to be a very tough sledding day where you can't believe they're down 2 touchdowns to Stanford type thing.
Yeah, and I really, with Wimbush, I think that it is so mental with him.
I wish that's a problem for me, though.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just mental.
You have to play with a brain. Yeah. It's just like your mentality, and it was weird this week, because after the game on Saturday, Brian Kelly said he felt Wimbush was too amped up and was just like overthinking it, just too wired. On Sunday, I asked, well, how do you stop that from happening? And he said, again, one of the developing young quarterback type thing. And then we talked to Wimbush on Tuesday, and I said, so how did you get from first half Brandon Wimbush to second half? The second half, he was quite good. And he said, like, the weather was better. That was it. And I'm just like, it's just like a bunch of different storylines about what's happening, why it's happening. And that sort of gets back to as we move forward to picks, like, I just don't have confidence in Notre Dame in any place remotely close to where I was.
No, not where you were. There's no way.
2 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, mid-September, this is, even though my picks have been quite bad, this is my least confident, probably bad pick. Because I just don't have a handle on Notre Dame anymore, even though that they've surprised me in some weird ways the last 3 weeks.
I would not bet on this game. There's no chance.
A stay away.
Yeah, this is a total stay away game, I think. Because it is a pick'em. I mean, Notre Dame by 2 on the road. Notre Dame's a better team, and they're only favored by 2 on the road. They're not playing great. Stanford's playing better than they were early in the year. We just mentioned their defense. They've come around a little bit. Even their offense, you would think a team with this attack, and I guess it does speak to teams loading the box a little bit, they were only converting about 40% on third down offensively. Stanford, if you think about that, the last two games, they're 18 of 33, so they're trending better, and that's somewhat with and without Bryce Love. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends that if Stanford's trend keeps going up, but I think it really just depends on what you get from Brandon Wimbush. And it might be dependent on what you get from Brandon Wimbush early. Because you don't want to go behind 17-7 to Stanford with Brandon Wimbush not playing well at Stanford,
no.
Considering you haven't won out there in Brian Kelly's tenure. You haven't won out there since both teams were horrid 10 years ago in 2007.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you said don't bet on this game. If I was betting on this game, I would take the points in a second. I mean, home dog, like, and with all the dynamics, like, David Shaw versus Brian Kelly, Notre Dame against ranked Power 5 teams on the road, Stanford at home in November, Stanford at home against non-conference opponents, like, everything would say
all of those points to Stanford.
Yeah, everyone points to Stanford. If Stanford was a 2.5-point favorite, then I think you'd be like, yeah, I'm not really comfortable with that. But, like, Notre Dame is a favorite, and in some ways doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, there have been some lines all year where they haven't made sense to me, and at the end of the game, you're like, oh, right. So maybe this will be one of those, like, Vegas knows type games, and Notre Dame will win by a field goal. But I'm picking Notre Dame 28-24, but man, I am just so uncomfortable with
what
this
is it
game
what
right
is
now.
It on? What is your one thing that it's, makes you think they'll win?
It comes down to sort of a blend of if not now when.
That's how I feel.
And like that's how I feel. It just makes more sense. Like, and those really have very little to do with what happens in the game. It's just like it comes down to my analysis. Come on already.
That's how I felt about Georgia too. It's perfectly fair. Yeah. There's so many, just looking at it, going, I think last week, I was like, I think Notre Dame will beat them. I think they're a better team. And just looking at everything Stanford has, you don't think of Stanford home mattering, except they play well at home. It doesn't matter that their crowd isn't intimidating anybody. They play well at home.
Someone asked Brian Kelly about that yesterday, about going on the road in a hostile environment. Yes. I almost, if I had the microphone, I'd have been like, hostile environment? Are you kidding me? Like, you were just at Miami. Hostile environment.
Yeah, this is going to be like a day on the course, yeah. Walking around into polite golf claps when there's some gains, but they just play better at home. I have no idea why I'm sticking with Notre Dame winning it. I thought this week that I figured Notre Dame would win. I'm trying to stick with the rule, don't bet from the most recent thing you've seen, and that's why Vegas has big buildings. Comes down to a field goal.
As it pretty much always
Notre
does
Dame
in this series.
Has to pull one of these out at some point. Banged up running backs, passing games from the Stone Ages if Wimbush isn't on, and I'm still finding, and I'm going to go under. The over-under is 58. Take the under, right? You got to take the under. But 4 weeks ago, I pounded that like there was going to up and down the field. I don't think Bryce Love is healthy. I don't think Josh Adams is healthy. I think Josh Adams is healthier than Bryce Love and can give Notre Dame the carries he gave them against Navy, and that was a sneaky 100. He wouldn't get a, you know, he was running them over at the end, and Stanford's going to handle him better than that. But because I think Adams is healthier than Love, in my opinion, Brandon Wimbush is not totally in the tank as other people's seems to be. I think he can help them running the ball.
Yes.
And we're going to get into this. I'm going to have Notre Dame in the 27-24 range. All winning right. The game.
You heard it here first.
We'd have no idea why.
two very highly uncomfortable picks for Notre Dame in this week.
18-14 in November, Brian Kelly. 22-6, David Shaw.
To me, it's the 0-8 on the road versus Power 5 ranked teams. Like,
what about winning Stanford winning 5 straight against top 10 teams at home?
That's
like a Lou Holtz record.
This is not a lot of feel good stuff happening here. But
don't listen to us.
Yeah. But on that note, well, we both think Notre Dame's going to win and finish 10-2, and then go on to a New Year's Six bowl game. So, on that note, segment one, Irish Illustrated Insider in the book. Segment two coming up next.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana. Serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. We have a couple Twitter questions. The first one is, how does Notre Dame get into the playoff scenario? I know that it's unrealistic, but it's not out of this world with the losses that have to happen.
That question was submitted by everyone.
It was actually submitted by everyone. Actually, I was taking it from Roger Craig because my old favorite 49er running back. I took his question, but I don't think it's actually him. Pete and I both believe Alabama has to be in. to help Notre Dame because Alabama's getting in. They cannot play two more games. So if Alabama loses to Auburn, they're still getting in. That's the issue that Notre Dame fans kind of have to understand with Alabama. They are getting in right now. So Alabama wins the SEC by beating Auburn and Georgia. Miami wins the ACC by beating Pitt and Clemson, knocking out Clemson in this scenario. And then you and I believe that, you, as you pointed out, Pete, one of the two, you only have to knock out one of the two conferences out of Big 12 and Big 10. I feel like if Minnesota could beat Wisconsin and Michigan beats Ohio State and Wisconsin ekes by three-loss Ohio State in the Big 10 championship game, they might not be in. You feel like they would be. I don't know how Oklahoma, I guess if TCU hammers them, they wouldn't get in. But the problem with this is Oklahoma is the number one team this week out of everybody Notre Dame needs to lose that is not going to lose. They're at home as a 21-point favorite against West Virginia and their backup quarterback. So I feel like Oklahoma is going to find a way in.
Yeah, I would almost write off Oklahoma as the third participant.
You think Notre Dame has to target the Big Ten?
Well, not that they have anything to say of course about it. Yeah. But yeah, I think if you're looking at like, okay, where does the spot open up for Notre Dame? It opens up in the Big Ten because it's not opening up in the SEC. And in fact, it could be closed out by the SEC if Alabama does lose.
That's why you need them to win.
And Georgia wins out, then Georgia and Alabama are both going. At that point, Notre Dame there's no path for Notre Dame to make it. So yeah, I think if there's a four-team field and Notre Dame is in it, it will be Alabama, Oklahoma, Miami, and Notre Dame. That's the four-team field that Notre Dame could be included in. I'm not sure if there's
really... If craziness happens and Oklahoma gets absolutely obliterated...
By West Virginia.
Or loses to West Virginia and loses to TCU, then I don't think... You know what? If they just lose to West Virginia, because then you got to worry about TCU.
Could be. Could be. I just don't see how there's a path to Notre Dame making the playoff without Alabama winning out, Oklahoma winning out, Miami winning out, especially Miami. And really, if I'm sort of like if I like to needle the college football playoff, join a conference narrative, I would love to see Miami and Alabama make it, an 11-1 Alabama make it that did not win their conference, and Miami and Alabama both make it with only 12 games, because apparently you can't make it if you don't play a 13th game,
which is the dumbest thing.
But then half the field would be in without playing a 13th game. So there's some intrigue this weekend. It will all be over by the end of this weekend, though.
The fun thing about
I shouldn't say that, because if you get the first steps of like a Minnesota upset of Wisconsin,
right,
then the Big Ten championship game gets a lot more interesting. You know, the Ohio State Michigan game. If Michigan gets that one, then things get really interesting. So it could all be over by Saturday, even with Notre Dame winning. Doesn't necessarily mean that it will be.
The fun thing is every team we've mentioned has a road game, including Notre Dame, except for Oklahoma this weekend. So a lot of stuff can happen when you're playing on the road in college football. Minnesota is a 16.5-point home underdog to Wisconsin for whatever they call that.
Is that Floyd of Rosedale or is Iowa involved in that?
Is it Iowa involved in that?
Yeah, I think
We should know that, I would say, but actually we don't need to at all.
Did you know this weekend's for the Legends Trophy, by the way?
I did. I heard about that, and I think Notre Dame can sweep all their trophies, and that's just as important as a playoff spot, according to the... Those trophies, man.
If the Legends Trophy was between us right now, I could not identify it as a Legends Trophy.
Let me put it this way. I have attended about 20 Notre Dame USC games, and I found out 6 years into covering them that there was a shillelagh. So, there we go. That's how important those trophies are.
All right, we got a few more Twitter questions. First one is from Scott Gronek, and he wants to know, what are the odds of Notre Dame's offensive line taking the field against Michigan next year, left to right, Eichenberg, Bars, Mustafer, Kramer, Hainsey? That's got to be the favorite,
That's
right?
Probably the favorite. Lug is the other guy that could be involved.
Lug could be the sixth guy.
Maybe they're doing that could be a rotating tackle situation. And Lug could maybe beat out Eichenberg because, as we know, everybody's really good as a redshirt freshman. Yeah. And as a redshirt freshman, get a little bit worse and they're learning. And then you find out Alex Barrs is going to his fifth year and he's no longer the number one prospect in the history of football, as Frank Kelly kind of intimated. He was the top tackle prospect he had seen in 25 years of coaching at one point. And now he's just a really good guy that's going to help the team a lot next year.
Yeah, be a good fifth-year senior.
I wrote down the possibility of Hainsey, Kramer, Mustafer, Barrs, and Lug. Just because I thought Eichenberg would have made more of a push this year. And it's not that he's behind McGlinchey, because they chose to move him behind McGlinchey because he was not making enough of a push against Hainsey and Kramer. So that opens it up. But you know what? He'll be a third-year guy next year, and that would be obviously the time for him to step up.
That's what happens normally with offensive linemen. Their junior year is when you really know what you have. So if they have something with Liam Eichenberg, and that was somebody that I asked Mike McGlinchey about yesterday, you'll know in spring ball next year. And they need to have something in
Liam Eichenberg. Want your junior highly ranked lineman that we all loved to be a starter.
Well, especially when there's not really much in the fourth year senior class. They don't have a whole lot of options outside of him and Josh Lugg. So they need Eichenberg to be good. All indications were from McGlinchey, at least, that he was good. And I like that he was able to offer a critique about why he hasn't moved up farther than he has already. He said he's sort of a too emotional player like McGlinchey was, where that is a negative. I mean, it's worth remembering Mike McGlinchey did not break into the lineup until the end of his sophomore year.
It was 14 LSU.
Yeah.
And so, because Lombard was hurt.
Yeah, it was the second half of the last game of the year in a throwaway game. That's when he started to be a player. Now, Liam Eichenberg would only be a game and a half later than that in terms of just the games of your career. So I'm highly intrigued by what he'll bring to the table next year. Other Twitter question, Adam Nichols wants to know, do you think Josh Adams has shown enough to prove that he's ready at the next level, or would he benefit by returning for his senior year?
He should go because he's beaten up and he needs to start his pro career right now. He has a high school injury that's an issue, and he has many injuries, and he should go. You're not going to prove anything behind a worse offensive line. Go, make some money, come back, get your degree.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd be better off if he was back, obviously.
I'm not saying they're better when he leaves, but he's better off leaving.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. All right, questions for our readers. Fonzie wants to know, since the regular season finale and Notre Dame will have over a month to get ready for the bowl game, wouldn't you think they might run Wimbush more because he can rest?
Yes. Run him. Okay. Constantly. I want it to look like the Temple game in the first half or the second half where everybody keeps saying, man, they're running him a lot. They should run Brandon Wimbush a lot in this game. The run is the absence of a pass. I endorse running for the absence of the pass. He can rest for 3 weeks. Unless his hand means he can't carry the ball in his left hand, then carry the right hand. Just run.
I'm with you on that one. I was going to put this in my extra point column later today, but the design quarterback run, they're averaging about 4 per game, about maybe more like 3.5 per game. 8 would be fine. I'm excluding quarterback keeps the ball on a read option. I'm just saying running veer, quarterback draw, that kind of stuff. Like almost wildcatty type things. I would empty my playbook of all those pages Saturday night at Stanford.
It's the number one thing I think could help them win this game is Brandon Wimbush running more, and caution to the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Benedict, Chip Long was known for a fast-paced offense. Before the season, he stated he could change the speed of his offense to go fast or slow. What speed is this offense operating at?
Variable. I mean, fast and slow, because we were talking about that in the first segment about where Notre Dame ranks in terms of sort of overall play count. Even though there are 115 plays more than Stanford on the year, just in terms of the number of plays that they've had, it's like pretty middle of the road. I think they're 57th, so it's almost exactly the middle of the road. I expected them to be much higher than that, although I've always felt like the tempo thing was a little bit overrated when he came here, because when you looked at how many plays Memphis ran last year, I think they were top 30, but it's not like it wasn't like Dino Babers at Syracuse, where it's just like you're pedal to the floor regardless of whether it even makes sense. I mean, they'll go fast after a big play because the defense is discombobulated. Yeah. I think that's great. That doesn't mean you need to go fast all the time.
No, the fast after the big play I like. One issue on being middle of the pack, they have been involved in 6 blowout wins, 7 mm-hmm. blowout wins. You're not running fast in the fourth quarter when you're involved in a blowout win. You're bleeding it when you're running it out. So maybe they'd be 45 or something, which would still not be. I like the speed they work at. Not just selfishly because we chart the game while we're watching it, but I think that I like how they go fast after big plays. Every once in a while, I think, get moving a little bit here when the offense is stalling, but I've only thought that every once in a while in the last 2 Saturdays mm-hmm. because the offense had never stalled before since the Georgia game. So I don't really have a problem with this pace. I think if you don't absolutely 100% push the pace, it's not that big of an advantage anyway. After the big play, it's great because 40-yard gain.
Yeah.
First and 10, you may have catched the personnel. It's just the way to go.
And it's one of those things where, okay, you've got your lead running back has, a half dozen different injuries. Dexter Williams can't figure out why he's got on the field, or his ankle or thigh contusion. Tony Jones has got an ankle. EQ has got a head. Now you got Chase Claypool with the shoulder. He's a little dinged up. Mac had a concussion. Brandon Wimbush has a busted up hand. Do you really want to play tempo with that? Probably not. Like, less is more, I think, in some instances, especially when your offense is banged up. Irish by the Sea, do you think the coaching / culture model put into place by Kelly this season is the foundation for a consistent long run of success for Notre Dame football?
I think it absolutely is, as long as they follow it. Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey made them become this team. You can't look at your personnel in August and think anything else, but we have to be this team offensively. I know their offensive line should be a strength next year, but I'm worried that it's going to be talked about in the spring and talked about in the summer and talked about in August. Then they come out and they throw 45 times against Michigan. This personnel, you absolutely 100% had to say, are we going to be a power team? Mm-hmm. So I hope they still feel that way next year, assuming that they can. You move Kramer to guard and Barza guard and Mustafa at center, you can be a power team. These are not low, and they're not low-rated tackles they have out there. I think it's the way to go. I don't think Notre Dame can win with their old model.
Yeah, I don't think they can win with their old model. I also don't think this year's model has to be the model next year. I think in some ways they can have a Stanford model where they're averaging, I think they average about 185 yards passing per game. Like, Notre Dame's not even close to that.
I don't mind Wimbush getting better. I'm just saying, I think that it's okay to be the running team.
Yeah, you can be a run for, because I don't even the coaching staff, I don't think they really like the way that they're winning right now. They want to be able to throw the ball in a much more functional way than they have. They would, what are they averaging, 300 yards per game rushing? I don't think that's what they, they're at 290. I don't think they want to average 290 yards rushing per game. And I think if they averaged 200 yards rushing per game, this offense would be even harder to defend, because the implication would be that you're averaging 225 yards passing.
If that part comes into fruition, yes.
And it has to come into fruition because they're not going to be able to run the ball as well as they did this year. So they need to find something else. There's only one other thing you can find. That's throwing it. So that's a improved Brandon Wimbush next year. If that happens, then the offense can be more balanced.
But they can't go back.
No, I'm not advocating
not even close.
At all, ever, 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 to hearing the phrase hats in the box or short passing game is extension of the running game. Now, but if you wanted to move towards RPO, that would be okay. Right. That's fine. If you said that a team overloaded against the run and we had a couple one-on-one matchups on the outside where we had St. Brown and Claypool together or Stefferson and behind a tight end, like, great. I think that's cool. But they don't need to go back to chucking it in a hurricane, empty sets, four wide. I am curious to see if the empty set does return next year. And I think it's okay at times, but I don't think Brandon Wimbush has thrown one pass out of an empty set all year.
If Brandon Wimbush is the quarterback and he can throw, I don't mind the empty set. The empty set used to drive me crazy. This is a tangent. Yep. The immobile quarterback.
Well, that's the thing. He's not an immobile quarterback.
No, he's not, but he would have to be a much better passer for an empty set to mean anything to. What you say to me sounds good and also makes me think of 8-5 next year. So, nope, I don't like it. I am all about the running to mitigate the damage. So, we'll find out against Michigan, I guess. 60 passes. Go Irish, go 5. Should Indy fans be more worried about the players being ready to play in a primetime game or the coaches being ready to coach in a primetime game?
Players. I think this is definitely players. And I know that the 0-8 has very little to do. 0-8 on the road against Power 5 ranked teams has very little to do with the current players because they only account for like two of those games. But I think if you look at Notre Dame's performance, particularly at Florida State, at Clemson, at Stanford 2 years ago, I think you would be hard-pressed to say Notre Dame lost that because Brian Kelly wasn't prepared in a big game atmosphere.
I thought the Clemson one is an outlier in that. I thought he was expertly prepared for Florida State and Stanford Clemson with that start to the game and him talking about the bus being late and all that.
That was not
afterwards.
Great.
That was not. But I agree with you that they came out firing against Florida State and underdog role. They came out firing against Stanford when they had to win that game. I think it's on both of them from Arizona State. They had a quarterback and a coach that
was a mess.
That was a train wreck. I would just be worried because David Shaw is a really good coach. Brian Kelly is a good coach, and David Shaw's had the best of him. But I think, Pete, what if I told you that Brandon Wimbush is going to respond in this game? I'm not worried about it. I'm not really worried about other guys being. I think I'm not worried about the defense playing down because it's a big game. I think they might miss tackles at safety because they miss tackles at safety. But if Brandon Wimbush just comes to play, I don't see why Kevin Stefferson's going to come to play. Josh Adams on the offensive line will come to play. I think Smythe. I'd be worried about Mac.
Yeah.
We'll talk about.
If Brandon Wimbush can replicate his performance at Michigan State, which is not a unhostile environment. He was 14 of 20 for 173 yards and a touchdown. Not blowing you away with numbers, but if he puts up that stat line, I think Notre Dame will win by 10 points. That's the thing. Like most
worried about one player coming to play.
Yeah, most of my lack of confidence or certainty or really just hunch at all about Saturday night has to do with Notre Dame's quarterback.
And I don't think he'd have a bad 60 minutes like he did against Miami. I just think he could have a bad start, and that hurts things. Their confidence.
As Brian Kelly said, like, you can't just take two quarters to warm up into the game. Like, stuff doesn't work that way. So if he doesn't, and at Michigan State he was on it from the very beginning, if he can get to wherever he was mentally that night, if he can get back to that, great. I think Notre Dame will be in good shape.
J-Law 1, when I look at certain games, Miami this year, Clemson 2015, it appears as though when an opponent says to ND, you are not going to run, the offense sort of acquiesces to that, rather than continue, as BK said earlier, to be stubborn with the run. I've seen this with Sanford and now BK. Mike Sanford, not Stanford, and now BK. Any reason why they don't try to stick with it?
I mean, they have tried to stick with it. You know, they stuck with it against Georgia, sort of, even though Wimbush threw it 40 times. But I do think they need to stick with it on Saturday. I do think this is a stubbornness check for them. Because the offensive line has not played great the last few weeks. The last 2 weeks, I should say. I put up 700 yards against Wake Forest. But there have been a lot of instances, Miami in particular, where a athletic interior defensive lineman really got the better of Mustafa and Bars in particular. Last week, there were some instances of that, but nobody from Stanford is going to essentially try to reverse cut block you the way that Navy's defensive lineman did. So I think the offensive line needs to play its best game in about a month, and if they do, then they'll stick with the run game. I think that the coaching staff has it in them to avoid this sort of acquiesces type thing that J-Law is talking about. Because there have been times where I'm complete agreement with you. And it's not even against 100% good teams. I think they have done that against bad teams on the road. So I would like to see the stubbornness that Brian Kelly talked about in September return in November. Because it's been a little bit intermittent lately.
Stanford's not good enough against the run not to be stubborn offensively and run the ball at them. They give up yards in the run. They're going to make some plays. Keep running. So this week, it would be awful if they acquiesce. We will know our predictions were wrong midway through the second quarter.
Yeah.
The Miami was a buzzsaw situation. Obviously, they've been better off running than throwing interceptions for touchdowns and throwing interceptions for bad field position. But it is tough when you fall behind two touchdowns. And it's not impossible. A lot of coaches stick with it. But when you kind of feel the game getting away, you want to make a play instead of three and out punt. That takes a very stubborn, very confident coach. Confident in his defense, which he probably wasn't after watching Miami. The D ended up playing well, but he probably wasn't too confident in the D after those first two series to think, I can try to start running the ball here, and if I have to punt, I have to punt. If they run the ball against Stanford, you should be scoring every quarter. A touchdown drive, or a field goal drive if you stick with it. So I think they will stick with it this weekend, actually.
Yeah, I think that they will too. I mean, it's.
I don't know if they would if it was Georgia, because I think they would say, "Well, we're not getting anywhere." And
Stanford is not Georgia.
No,
it's a. That's a big development in terms of our analysis of this game. All right, last question. Statman 72. Alize Mack was supposed to help the offense by forcing opposing defenses to compensate for the matchup advantages he created. Given his limited production this year, can opposing defenses just play him straight up as they would anyone else?
Yes.
I have very little else to add
Durham
to that one.
Durham Smythe is the guy they need to make plays at tight end for him this week. And I think he needs to make some plays if they're going to be down. St. Brown.
Yeah, that's been...
I'm not saying a playmaker. They're a guy that moves the chains a couple times. That's if he can be involved, that'll be enough. Now, Mac, I have no idea why he hasn't been able to do more this year.
That one's a mystery to me. He plays a lot. He played... Of all Notre Dame's offensive players, he had the most snaps last week. Why? I don't know. He was targeted 3 times, 0 catches. His blocking wasn't great. He's had moments where he's been an okay blocker, but
he has had moments where he's been an okay blocker.
But I think overall his junior season is just very hard to understand why it's played out the way that it's played out.
Remember last week I screamed he hasn't scored a touchdown. I can't believe he still hasn't scored a touchdown. You're like, he has scored a touchdown. But it was just such a meaningless thing. touchdown against Miami. I felt like he hasn't scored.
Weren't you watching the second half of the Miami game?
I wasn't, for crying out loud. It was a nice catch too. I don't know what to tell you. I think when Alize Mack makes a play, I don't think I'm going to be shocked. But you cannot count on it right now. It's the last thing you can count on for this offense. Is that they're going to hit Alize Mack for a big play on 3rd and 16. He's capable of it. We watched it. We watched it his freshman year. We watched it all spring.
Yeah.
We didn't see much of it in August because he did hurt his hamstring early, but I mean, he was a focal point go-to guy in the spring.
Yeah, I mean, he's sitting there at, I have him at 39 targets, and those have turned into 181 yards. I mean, that's just
impossible, almost. That would be a thing.
Yeah, 4.64 yards per target. Durham Smythe is at 11.7. Claypool's at 9.7. Stefferson's at 8.2. Boykin is at 8.2. Stefferson is at 8.6. And it's like, he's not been put in positions where the passes, the routes he's on are really down the field at all.
Not since early.
So it's like, he hasn't had a lot of production, nor has the staff trusted him enough to put him in position to have a lot of production. It's just a weird combination of events that have led to a pretty disappointing junior season.
Would be a good, and not even doing glass totally full, glass half full here. It would be a very advantageous day without Equanime St. Brown if Alize Mack can catch 3 passes for 3 short first downs like he did against North Carolina. 3 or 4 of those, chain moving. 4 catches, 39 yards, 3 first downs would be great.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a good athlete.
Yes,
he's got all sorts of ability.
The touchdown catch was nice, the one I forgot existed.
he's done some good things, but it just has not come together there. So I don't know. That's a mystery. Statman 72. I think neither of us have a really good answer for you on that one.
The answer is yes to the question. Can they just line straight up and play him? They can. Yes. He's got to change that.
The other part of the question. What you're really asking, Statman 72, we cannot answer. But for this weekend, yes. Defenses can just play him straight up. All right. Well, that's it for this week's Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Tim and I will be heading out to California on Friday. We will do our pregame instant analysis and postgame analysis, all sorts of coverage from Notre Dame Stanford Saturday night at Stanford Stadium. So until then, thanks for listening.